This is the Oil Sand Tech Podcast with Aaron Shearhart. The oil sand industry is the largest unconventional oil business in Canada. And on this podcast, we'll be interviewing people who are building products and building services that can improve the oil sands. We tell the story of how to build products and bring them to market. The Oil Sand Tech Podcast. And now, Aaron Shearhart.
Thank you for joining me here on episode 3. Today we're actually in for quite a treat. I had a chance to sit down with a serial entrepreneur and a current president and CEO of Pumpwell Solutions out of Calgary, Alberta. So Nav Dunne is really trying to bring Silicon Valley concepts into an oil and gas setting in Canada. And this interview kind of touches on the corporate culture, kind of issues around like an intense focus on quality from the design perspective, not fixing the problem after it's actually occurred. It's taking proactive steps in order to obsessively create the best possible product that he can for his clients. I've also included a quote of the week on this episode. And so the following little excerpt from the interview will give you a taste of what's to come. Thanks for joining us.
I always ask the question of members of our team. I said, what would you attempt to do if you knew you could not fail? If you knew that you had a safety net, what would you attempt to do? And it's amazing. You just ask yourself that question. You would probably say, yeah, if I knew I couldn't fail, I'd go skydiving. I'd probably climb Mount Everest. I'd do all these great things. You would do all these great things if you knew you could not fail. So if we give our team that same level of support, that, you know what, you're not going to fail. They're going to attempt a lot more and accomplish great things. And that's what we try to do here.
So it's my pleasure today to welcome Nav Dunne, the president and CEO of Pumpwell Solutions. So Nav is a technologist and serial entrepreneur that has been involved in driving innovation and technology-based change, a big proponent of data management and big data kind of solutions in the oil and gas industry. And so Nav, welcome to the show.
Absolutely. I've been with Pumpwell for a couple of years now. I was initially brought on to assist in re-architecting the core technology. The company had outgrown the technology offering and was looking to develop a new platform that would allow for future growth and allow the company to expand into other areas. In addition to overseeing the redevelopment of the technology platform, I also dived into rebuilding the corporate culture. It's something I've done in the past and had lots of experience with, and so I was tasked with that. We took it from a command and control environment to one of collaboration, transparency, and one that drives encouragement. We've now built an organization that is what I would consider a high-performing organization, where people are striving to be better and do better each and every day.
Yeah, that sounds like a great place to work.
Yeah, it's a fantastic place to work. And, you know, one of the things that we've been doing recently is promoting our environment and our culture more, as it's quite unique when it comes to the oil and gas industry. In the oil and gas industry, you'll find a lot of typical corporate environments, and we are completely the opposite of that. We've had articles published on us where they compare us more to like a Google office and a Google culture. And we certainly pride ourselves on that.
Yeah, I think that's super important, having an atmosphere where you're able to find solutions and I guess collaborate across different product lines and that kind of thing as well. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, we certainly leverage a lot of our environment to promote some of that. When you get an opportunity to ever visit our office, one of the things you'll see is how it's designed to leverage our core values. A couple of our core values are collaboration and transparency, and you'll see clearly how that's leveraged with the environment, how it ties in, and how the environment actually encourages both of those, collaboration and transparency.
Okay, great. So before we go into the technology side of the interview, so we want to hear about your personal journey. So how did you get your start in building technology?
Well, strangely enough, when I first entered university, technology was not a passion for me. I actually found myself drawn to the world of marketing. The whole concept of really understanding human behavior when it comes to buying and being able to indirectly influence that behavior really appealed to me and spoke to me. And as I continued to get deeper into the world of marketing, I was introduced to technology and immediately gravitated to that world. I found myself naturally gifted at being able to do simple things like writing a computer program. It was just natural for me, and I immediately got it. Throughout my career, though, I worked in various technology organizations, and I've always been excited by blinky lights and whirring noises. And I'm naturally quite inquisitive. So as I continually ask questions and constantly brainstorm of better ways of doing things, it was natural for me to put the two together, marketing and technology. And about 15 years ago, I actually had started my first startup. It was a company called CanCow, and it was similar to an eBay-style online auction, but it was for the cattle industry. The entire idea and business came about over dinner with a friend and his father who owned a cattle business. And we sat there, and me being very inquisitive, just continued to drill into, you know, what is it that they do? What are the challenges that they see in their business? And what we realized was that there's a significant opportunity in how they auction off cattle and moving it from a very, very analog, traditional method to something that was more online and more modern. And keeping in mind that this is 15 years ago that we were doing this, and it turned into a pioneering business. The whole concept was unique to the cattle industry. Technology was unique to the cattle industry. If you can just imagine these cattle farmers, many of them didn't even know what the internet was or that it existed. Again, that predominantly came about through just me being more inquisitive than anything else and seeing how we could line up technology into this this very archaic industry. That was really my start into technology business development. Prior to that, I had worked on a few different technology initiatives with other companies, but that was really the start of it, where I started to see and build technology ideas.
So how did you approach that problem, and when did you realize it was a viable business?
Well, I didn't really realize it was a viable business until much later, but part of the light bulb moment for me was as they were explaining to me some of the challenges that they were having within their business, I could very quickly see how technology could actually remove some of those challenges, some of those hurdles. A good example was the transportation of cattle to auction sites. Cattle would get nervous and as a result would lose weight during that transportation. Because cattle don't like to be transferred around in these big long trucks. And so they would lose weight. Well, when they got to the auction house, they would be significantly less weight than they were when they were initially loaded onto the transporter. And as a result, they would lose weight, so they would be worth less money. And so we were able to overcome that by using digital technology, which minimized the amount of traveling they had to do. So they were able to set up webcams and cameras throughout different fields where they could bring the auction actually online and transport the cattle to a shorter distance. That all came about as we were trying to understand the challenges and then trying to figure out how we can use technology to solve that. But where we realized that there was money in this and that we could actually make this into a business is when we started to look at how much money was being lost due to the transportation. These cattle are quite expensive. And as we looked at how much weight they were losing in this transportation, we realized that there were significant dollars for each farmer that they could to reap if we could keep the weight up of the cattle. And once we spoke to a few of the cattle farmers, and we had three or four on board that were really interested in trying out this technology, we realized that this was in fact a significant moneymaker. So we started up the business. We developed the technology. The technology at that time was very much being developed in a garage. Once the technology was up and running, we had a larger player in the cattle industry come along and say, you know what, I'd like to buy the technology. Here you go. And wrote us a check, and we were more than happy to sell the technology to them, because I certainly was not an expert in the cattle industry, nor was I planning on being in the cattle industry for a very long period of time. I just happened to have an idea.
Wow, so that was your first real exit, I guess you could say.
Yeah, that was my first real exit, and it wasn't a ridiculously large exit, but it certainly was a healthy exit and allowed me to continue to do what excited me, which was build organizations.
Yeah, I don't know. That really gets me excited as well, in terms of being able to take an idea and turn it into something. I mean, in an industry, I guess, where you don't even maybe... not having the full understanding, it's interesting taking a look from an external perspective where maybe you're able to see opportunities that are in plain sight.
Yeah, and again, it has to do with my inquisitive nature. I will constantly be asking questions, and usually from those questions, there's some fantastic dialogue that it comes about. And again, with my marketing background, I'm able to tie the two together and say, well, how can we turn this idea into a product? And I think those two backgrounds are my strengths when it comes to building out a business idea.
So can you share with us what really drives you?
Sure. At my core, as I mentioned, I'm a technologist. You know, I've got a marketing background, but I'm a heavy technologist. I love working with technologies. But to me, it's not just the technologies by themselves. What really gets me excited is seeing how people and technology work together and to do really amazing things. I've got this quote that I live by. It's not really what the software does, it's what the people do with the software. And I've always loved that quote. That quote speaks to what I believe, and that is that technology by itself is really not much, but it's technology and people that make it all work together. I'm quite passionate about building. I love building ideas, products, teams, organizations. So what ultimately drives me is really a strong desire for results, and not just superficial results. I'm talking about real, tangible results that everyone can stand back, look at, and take pride in. So seeing a completed project, seeing a team perform beyond expectations, and seeing an organization deliver value to its employees and shareholders is what really drives me. And of course, having technology and people involved in all of that just makes it that much sweeter.
Such a great message. And but in terms of technology wise, what technology really excites you?
You know, I'm excited by pretty much everything. Blinky lights, whirring sounds, and you've got me hooked. But you know, on my radar right now, there's a few technologies that I'm really focusing my attention on. You know, at Pumpwell, we've really embraced innovation, and we utilize the latest technologies to enable us to deliver a better quality product to our clients. And one of the things that we did as a company is we've really embraced the cloud. In fact, we're probably the first technology company in the oil and gas sector that is completely cloud-based. And when I mean completely cloud-based, I mean we have no servers on our premises whatsoever. We don't use the traditional types of servers you might think of. All of our documents, our emails, our communication is all in the cloud, including our product. It's all in the cloud. I'm a real huge fan of the organizational benefits you can get from utilizing cloud-based technologies. And so we've chosen to leverage that and make it part of our core for our organization. You know, we not only use it for basic systems like emails and documents, but we've extended it beyond that into things like our accounting system. It's also in the cloud. Unfortunately, in our industry, oil and gas industry, Many companies are scared of cloud technologies, and that's a bit of a hurdle we're working to break down. But we believe that the cloud is here to stay, and we've certainly embraced that, and it still really excites me. Another technology that kind of ties in with what we're doing with our cloud platform that really excites me is mobile technologies. Nowadays everyone has a mobile device on their hip or in their hand or in their purse, and we believe that that's going to be a go-forward platform for much of what we're seeing here in the oil and gas industry. So we've really embraced it, not only as an enabler within our organization, but also as a focus of our product offering. We know that field operators and production engineers have mobile devices, so what we're trying to do is make it easier for them to use those mobile devices to interact with us and with our products. So that's another technology that really excites me, and I think there's huge potential there. A third technology that we've been really getting involved into more recently than anything is big data. I think the oil and gas industry is somewhat ripe for big data. The whole collecting very large quantities of data and using this data to find solutions and make real-time operational adjustments is key to improving performance. Right now, all the real-time improvements being made are manual. And as a result, it's not real-time, and nor are they basing it on real concrete data. So what we've been doing systematically within our product offering and in our organization is focusing on collecting more data, various types of data. We've certainly expanded the type of data, but we've also gone further and are now collecting what we call high-definition data. So our data is more defined, allowing us to zoom into parts of it and do some more analysis. And as a result, we've started to leverage big data technologies to make that simpler for us and allow us to deliver value to our clients.
Yeah, I think there is significant value in the big data offering. And I look forward to, I guess, seeing the progression of your company, and hopefully, I guess, just in terms of your application of it, it should be really interesting. In terms of product development, can you tell us about a product that you've developed? How do you move from idea into commercialization?
Sure. I briefly touched upon CanCal, but I will talk about another company that I had started up called Navnet. Manufactured a home automation system. About 7 years ago, as I was looking to add home automation to my house, I ended up researching what was out there. And what I discovered was that most of the technologies that were available were designed for the elitist, which meant they came with a premium price tag and also required specialized skills to set up, install, and configure. And as I was learning more about these technologies, I realized that there may be an opportunity here. There was nobody that was playing in the space where, someone like myself could easily get a home automation system up and running myself or could install it myself and at a relatively inexpensive price tag. And so I started doing more and more investigation into the home automation space to see, well, where's it going? There's got to be more people like me that are looking for home automation, but they don't have it today. And as I spoke to family and friends and talked about home automation with anybody I met with, they all had the same view of it. It's too expensive for me. Would love to have it. Can't afford it. And I said, well, what if you could afford it? Would you buy it? And the answer was always yes. So as I looked at that and started to investigate, well, what does the market look like? How many people are buying home automation today, and how many people are going to be buying home automation in 5 years and 10 and 15 years? And it was staggering. I was coming across reports that were saying that the home automation industry was going to grow to $20 billion by 2015. Just ridiculously large numbers. But what I saw clearly was that there was an opportunity. If someone could come in here and really disrupt this space with a product that was positioned for, I'll say, the average Joe, and the average Joe could install it themselves and not require a specialized person, then they could capture a significant amount of this market, because the big players in this market were very focused on the high end. That's where they were making all of their money. But no one was looking at the middle or lower end tier. So after doing a lot of investigation into how this would all work and what the product would look and feel like, decided to hire a couple of guys that could help me with that and start to flesh out more of the details. So at that time, we actually created the organization and then started to in our garages, essentially, build out the technology that would make this all work. And it was a bit of a challenge because in Canada we couldn't find easily the kinds of technologists that we would need to build this out. The technology and people that understood it were predominantly in the U.S. And so we did end up doing some contract work with some folks in the States that could help us build out the technology. But ultimately, over a course of a couple years, we had ended up building out a home automation system that was relatively inexpensive compared to what was out there, could be installed without any real specialized knowledge and skill, and we had an offering. Along the way, of course, we needed to raise some money to build a company, and we were able to secure some funding. It was fairly easy to get the money. However, we did realize that it was easier to raise that money in the U.S. than it is in Canada, or particularly Calgary. Calgary is heavy into oil and gas, and so they didn't necessarily understand the home automation space. It was, it was French to them, and they didn't quite understand it. So we ended up, it took a little bit longer for us to raise the money, but we were able to raise the money and deliver the product. In the end, we had lots of interest from various parties on the different parts of the technology, and we were able to sell off a core part of our technology that we had developed. And so it was another great exit for me.
So I think that we had a brief chat before, and you mentioned in terms of how you actually changed fundamentally this industry in terms of the product offering that you had. So maybe do you want to, or could you talk briefly about what made your product different and how you actually approached the problem?
Sure. There was a few aspects to it. When we looked at the industry, what we found was that much of the industry was using antiquated protocols, those communication protocols between different devices. So you may have one device speaking to another device through these antiquated protocols, and you would have a typical home automation system. You would have to really program into the system the exact communication. You want something to happen, and you would need to tell each of the devices exactly what to do in their defined language. And we thought that was quite antiquated. We thought the entire process of defining what types of devices you have were fairly antiquated. We wanted to bring in newer technologies, and so we wanted to leverage networking, and we wanted to leverage IP networks. And so we had developed IP modules that could be positioned around your house in front of various devices or attached to various devices, and each of the IP modules would essentially learn the characteristics of the device that it's attached to. And once it knew the attributes and the characteristics and knew all the functions, then it would report those results back to the main controller. From that point forward, the main controller knew exactly how it needed to communicate to that device to be able to tell it what to do. So if I needed to turn the television on, the controller would just say, "Hey, TV on." And that device would say, "You know what? This is a Samsung television. I know it speaks IR, infrared, so here's how I communicate with it, and this is what I do." And it would take care of that translation component of it. So we had these various modules that would actually intimately know the device itself by how you connected to it. That was a unique piece to our technology. It allowed us to get a significant leg up on our competitors deliver more value at a lesser price. You did have to pay for the modules, you did have to pay for the controller. But we weren't. Those units were built in a much much better fashion using modern technology. So we did have to use proprietary protocols. So we were able to leverage a lot of off-the-shelf components, off-the-shelf chips and boards to make all of that happen.
It's so interesting to me as well, because it's applicable in the oil and gas industry as well, in terms of when you say antiquated protocols and kind of old technology from the 60s or 70s for monitoring. And when we have the ability now in order to take all of that data in real time and have it over a 10-year period and make something tangible out of it, I think that there this experience really is applicable really in the oil and gas industry as well. So can you maybe move in and tell us a little bit more about Pumpwell and what you've got going on there?
Sure, absolutely. So first, you're absolutely right. A lot of what we did at NavNet in terms of the antiquated protocols and redefining them and using what's more commonplace can be leveraged into the oil and gas industry. And that is some of what we're doing here at Pumpwell. In fact, if you look at our Pumpwell offering, as I mentioned part of my introduction, is I was brought on to help re-architect the key offering. And in re-architecting it, we did do that. We looked at what we're doing in terms of our communications and said, you know what, can we leverage what's out there? Do we need to build it ourselves? Do we need to have proprietary protocols? No, we could do a lot of our communication and how we manage things through very common standards. For example, XML as a data transport. TCP/IP as a communication method. So UDP is a broadcast method. So we could leverage a lot of what was out there. You get a lot of antiquated protocols such as Modbus or CAN bus within the industry, but companies are using those predominantly because it's easy. And we look at it and say, well, those are antiquated. They don't provide the right types of support you need for newer technology. Like you want to integrate with mobile, you're going to have a hard time getting Modbus to work with a mobile device. But TCP/IP, XML, or web would work easily with a mobile device. And that's what we are looking at doing. So what we're working at Pumpwell really is taking technology that you and I may look at and say, yeah, it's out there, it's been around the block, but for the oil and gas industry, it's new, it's earth-shattering. You know, we've got push technology built into our system where our pump-off controllers can notify us when something goes wrong. It actually gets pushed to your device, your mobile device. You don't need to worry about pulling it like you would with a SCADA system. So, you know, our current technology is very focused on lowering lifting costs and increasing production from oil. And if we're now starting to use technology to make that simpler for everyone to do. So from the operators, from the production engineers, from the CEO or the VP sitting in the office, they'll be able to use our technology to get more insight into what they're doing and how their wells are performing. And most notably, we've been diving heavily into big data. We've seen a significant increase in the definition of data we capture. We've also been capturing various types of data. We believe we should throw a sensor on everything that's out there at the well level and capture as much of that data as we can to allow us to make much better decisions to help us improve performance of our wells. Our whole goal is to have clients really suck every drop of oil out of that wellbore, and that's what we're trying to focus on, and we're leveraging modern day technologies to make that happen.
At Pumpwell, how do you approach product development with respect to quality?
Different organizations really have different approaches to how they handle quality and what they think is quality. For some, they're really more interested in developing a cheaply built product and mass selling it, and they develop it to a certain level of quality, which is their standard. For me, our focus is on results. As I mentioned earlier, building a high quality product and selling it to those individuals that really see the value in the quality. I have a real fanatical desire to deliver a high quality product, and that bleeds into everything that we do. Really want to build a product that is perfect, and we have a relentless pursuit for perfection, and it exudes through everything that we do in our organization. And I'll give you an example of a story that you may have heard. Recently, we had about 6 months ago, we had a unit out in the field, one of our enclosures out in the field, and the corner of it was nicked by a tool that one of our installers was using. And as we looked at the corner of this unit, the paint had come off the corner of the unit, and we knew that the unit was going to rust over on that part of it. And we got thinking that, you know what, we really don't want it to rust. We want this thing to last forever. And so we looked at what was the best way of solving that problem. And the team got together in our collaborative way and had a good discussion about it. And the end result was that we started to zinc coat all of our enclosures before we powder coated them. And that way they wouldn't get rusted. Again, that speaks to the volumes of our desire for high quality.
So when you came into Pumpwell in terms of having the mission of changing the corporate culture, how did you approach that?
It was interesting. It's first, you know, you really need to understand what do you want the culture to be like? You know, what are you hoping to achieve? Because there's different types of cultures and they can be successful depending on what the real end goal is. For example, you know, we talk about a command and control culture. Well, that's prevalent throughout the military. But it works for them. It's exactly the style they use, and it works great for them. So it really is what do you want to achieve with your organization? So spent a bit of time trying to understand, well, what are we trying to build here with this company? And what is the long-term vision of this company? Where is it going to end? And then backing up from there and saying, well, what do we need to achieve that type of organization? And for me, I've spent time working in a lot of technology companies, even throughout the U.S. I've worked in New York and Seattle and even the Silicon Valley. And what I found is that the most successful organizations, technology organizations, leverage collaboration, extensive collaboration and extensive innovation. And that was something that we thought was particularly important to us when we were building our organization. So as we looked at the previous corporate culture, which was very much a command and control, we felt that wasn't where we wanted to take the company. You can get command and control even in the oil and gas industry. There's lots of organizations that are like that, very hierarchical organizations. We didn't want to be that. We wanted to be something unique. Being unique had multiple purposes, but one of the key purposes that was important to us was having people see us and want to be a part of us. Whether they want to be an employee, a shareholder, or whether they want to be a client, we wanted them to be somehow associated with Pumpwell. And that was, we felt that having a unique culture would go a long ways to making that happen. Also, as you know, with labor crunch that we have here in Alberta, we wanted, again, a unique place where people would come to and they would never want to leave. This would be something that was unique. They weren't here because of the money. They weren't here because of any one thing in particular. It was the entire culture just fit with them. So that's what we wanted to build from the beginning. And then we set out to make that happen. What we realized right off the bat was that we didn't have the right people in place to make that happen. A lot of your culture is based on people. You know, you can't have certain elements to your culture which are not people, but much of your culture is based on the type of people you have. And we felt we didn't have the right types of people. We didn't have people that were collaborative. We didn't have people that were transparent in what they did. And those were critical to us. So we went through and started to systematically reevaluate each individual within the company to determine whether we had the right person for the long haul. And I'll be honest with you, we went through a significant change in our staff. A huge percentage of our staff has changed over in the first 6 months to a year that I was here. And again, much of that had to do with just not being the right individual to be on the bus. We looked at beyond that. We started looking at how we work together. My philosophy is very simple. If you can get a bunch of people working extremely well together, it doesn't make a difference what they build. It'll be successful. And so we wanted to make sure that we had people that worked well together. So we had great people. Now, how do we get them to work well together? We introduced some fantastic processes. We brought in lean manufacturing concepts. We brought in agile and lean startup concepts into the organization. We started to focus on people interaction. And that was extremely important to us because that was how we were going to be delivering and building the product through this team interaction. So we had consistent improvements in our software, our hardware, and the design. And really that came about because of our culture, where people were more open to sharing and more open to participating in in meetings and in discussions that they weren't necessarily involved in previously. We also believe that you really can't have innovation without taking risks. And those risks can lead to mistakes. So our culture is very much accepting of mistakes. In fact, we look at mistakes as potential opportunities for improvement that haven't been realized yet. So in sometimes we'll actually commend someone for making a mistake. They'll make a mistake and we'll sit there and applaud. We'll say, fantastic. Now let's spend some time learning from that mistake, because that's really the opportunity for us. Another unique element to our culture is the incorporation of personal lives. You know, you've probably heard from various individuals you've spoken to where they may be talking about a balance between personal life and work life. We think that's wrong because a balance is where things are on opposite sides of the scale. We actually prefer a harmony between personal life and work life. And I'll give you an example of that. Our employees bring their kids to work. They actually utilize the facilities after hours. We've got a badminton court in our facilities. We've also got, table tennis and foosball and Xbox. And we get kids that will spend the day here just because their school is closed or whatever it is, daycare is closed, and their parents will bring the kids to the office. And we have no problem doing that. We have a room called the phone booth. It's a soundproof room designed to allow people to deal with personal matters. You want to take a personal call? Your child who wants to maybe sit in a quiet area and get some homework done. You can use one of our phone booths to make that happen. So we've created a harmony between personal life and work life rather than separating the two. That's been an important part of creating the right culture for us. And so we are at a point now where we get, for any positions that we've got open, we actually get a lot of resumes, a significant number of resumes, and we're turning away people. We just can't, we can't hire that many people, and so we're turning away people. So we have an opportunity to only hire the best of the best now.
Celebrating failure is something that's so important that the whole oil and gas industry is missing. Maybe could you bring us to like a moment in time where maybe one of your team members, had a failure and how you would approach going about celebrating and actually learning from that failure as opposed to punishing it,
Yeah, well, even, a lot of failures even happen in the software world, and we kind of overlook them, and we call them bugs. And bugs are actual opportunities, depending on how big it is, so we look... I'll give you an example. We had a developer one time, and he had a bug that actually made it to production. So we are huge sticklers of the quality of the testing that we do. And one of the KPIs, key performance indicators we have in the software development group, is the number of bugs we find in our production systems. And the goal is zero. And I know that you're like, wow, how you guys achieve that? We actually do achieve it. And remember, this is talk about found bugs. There could be bugs in there, just haven't found them. But our goal is zero on them. And we did find a bug in our production system about a year ago. And it was interesting, when I went to that, to make light of it, to make sure the guy not feel terrible, I went over to the developer and I said, yeah, you're always writing this buggy code. Can't believe it. It's such shoddy code you're writing. And it was very much in a jokingly, in a jovial manner. And everybody just kind of started laughing. And it made them realize that, it's okay to make a mistake. It's okay to put your hand up and say, the bug was mine. I did it. But then afterwards, we sat down and said, well, let's do a review of it. Let's do a quick retro to figure out how the heck that happened. Where did we fall down? And so when we do our retros, we ask ourselves two questions. What worked well and what worked less well? Okay, and so in this we said, we got a bug in production. So what worked well? Well, all these things worked fantastically. What worked less well? Well, one is QA missed it, the developer missed it, and it got into production. So how did it all happen? And then we start to take each one of those elements and roll it back to understand how it happened. And once we find out how it happens, the next step from there is patching it, making sure that process is solid so it never happens again. And that's the key part of what we do when we celebrate mistakes. But we've actually thought about creating a wall here, and in our facility called the Goof Up Wall, and putting your picture up there if you have a royal goof up. but you know, we make light of it. We make fun. We applaud when someone makes a mistake, as long as they own up to it and recognize that the next step is the real opportunity, which is learning from it.
That's such a powerful message, being able to embrace mistakes and really moving towards the opportunity of fixing those mistakes and continually improving.
Yeah, you know, our belief is that if you're not making mistakes, then you're really not doing anything. One of the slogan that we've got that you'll see posted on our walls in our office is, it says, a culture of accepting mistakes. And that's exactly what we tend to do, we accept them. I always ask the question of members of our team. I said, what would you attempt to do if you knew you could not fail? If you knew that you had a safety net, what would you attempt to do? And it's amazing. You just ask yourself that question. You would probably say, yeah, if I knew I couldn't fail, I'd go skydiving. I'd probably climb Mount Everest. I'd do all these great things. You would do all these great things if you knew you could not fail. So if we give our team that same level of support, that, you know what, you're not going to fail. They're going to attempt a lot more and accomplish great things. And that's what we try to do here.
What's your future vision for Pumpwell?
Well, Pumpwell is in the pump jack automation business right now. We're very much looking at optimizing oil wells. Now, when we look at the word optimization, it's quite interesting because optimization means different things to different people. And right now, we are optimizing that pump jack on that oil well. And I think that if you look at the oil and gas industry, we need to really look at optimizing much more of it. There's a huge amount of waste of labor that happens in this industry because we don't look for efficiencies in how we do things. And so what we're looking at doing is broadening our scope of optimization, our scope of helping organizations become more efficient and more effective. So not just looking at the oil pump jack, you know, broadening that view and looking at facilities, for example, looking at organizations and saying, you know what, we've got some fantastic internal processes here. How we work together is great. Can we educate our clients on working the same way? Can we provide them technologies and tools to help them become more efficient and effective? I'll give you one example. A typical production engineer in, let's say, in a mid-sized company may be able to oversee 30 to 40 wells, okay? And that's what they're going to optimize. They're going to optimize 30 to 40 wells. Anything more than that, they're not going to be able to spend enough time on each of the wells to help optimize it. Our engineers that we have here on staff, because of how they work, the tools that they have, the processes that they employ, can oversee anywhere from 100 to 140 wells on a person. So that's a big difference. And a lot of that has to do with how we work well together and our processes and our technology. And we are looking at ways of being able to use those processes, those technologies, into other parts of oil and gas industries.
I'm sure there are many other opportunities for you in the oil and gas industry in Canada, as I think you are the only business that are really that is embracing these Silicon Valley startup ideals in building products and services for the oil and gas industry.
Yeah, we've been getting a lot of interest because of our technology and how we actually develop things. We've had large clients, large companies come and visit us, and really what their intent was to learn more about how we work together, and not so much about the nuts and bolts of our technology, but how we work together. And we're finding that that's something that's quite unique in the oil and gas industry, and I think that we can bring that to more companies. And that's one of my focuses, and I believe that Pumpwell will be successful as a result of us being able to show how unique we are and how we do things so much better than other companies in this industry.
So what is the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you?
Best way to get in touch with me is via email, and I'll give that to you. It's my first name, Nav, N-A-V, dot my last name, which is D-H-U-N-A-Y, @pumpwell.ca.
Nav, it's been great having you on the show today. So if we can just finish off with one piece of advice to someone that's looking to leverage technology to improve the oil and gas or oil sands industry in Canada.
Sure. You know, it might be, my advice would probably be the same. You know, if you look at Pumpwell is a hub for talent and innovation, where engineers, coders, sales representatives, marketers, and managers, we all collaborate. It's through the core values of collaboration and transparency that we can really achieve this. So ultimately, it's about the people and not the technology. And I've always believed that surrounding yourself with those people that strive for nothing but the best will help you achieve nothing but the best. So that would be my advice, is surrounding yourself with those types of individuals, whether they be technologists or not technologists, but those that strive for the best, and you'll achieve it.
Thank you for listening all the way through to the end of the episode 3. If you have any questions or comments, head to oilsandtech.com where you can check out more info, or you can get in touch with me. My name's Aaron, and so we're actually going to be kicking off the Oil Sand Tech Meetup on December 10th in Calgary. The Oil Sand Tech Meetup is all about bringing people together in order to build products and services to solve oil sands problems. Some of the people that we highlight on the podcast here are actively doing that, and I'm really hoping that we can build a vibrant community of problem solvers that are actively interested in making the world a better place. So thanks again for joining me, and I look forward to hopefully meeting some of you in the future.